Corey, it's days after the 2015 trade deadline. The Pirates are one of the best records in the majors. They made quite a few trades, but why do I feel so bad, and why am I watching J-Hap pitch right now?
It is an interesting situation when you have the third most wins in Major League Baseball, and yet you still feel like the sky's falling. But when J-Hap is losing to the Cubs 4-0, and Jeff Locke pitches tomorrow, and then you've got Kershaw on the bump against you on Friday, you start to wonder, will the Pirates ever win again? I really was optimistic about all the moves Neil Huntington made last week, and even some of the non-moves. But, you know, 7 days later, not even, it starts to feel like maybe we're not in as good a shape as we thought we were.
And how did they, and I've been thinking about this, and I've read a lot of stuff, talked to some people online, and here's my scenario and how I think we got to this point of watching J-Hap pitch a meaningful baseball game against the Cubs. So they make the move for Joe Blanton, which I thought wasn't a half bad move. Maybe Joe Blanton's revived his career a little bit of coming out of the pen this year. He certainly looked good against us. He's been good against other teams that aren't us. He's had a good year out of the bullpen.
He cost nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And
cash.
If that's your role for him, is just come out of the pen, be a decent arm. He's been striking guys out. He's not walking guys. Instantly, he's got the credibility of being around him. He's a veteran. He's been around before, and he's had very good seasons before. I think he's an instant upgrade over Deolis Guerra, right? I think that's what everyone assumed.
Yeah, absolutely. For the short term, you can't do much better than that in a push for the playoffs. You trust him a lot more than a lot of the guys that you could have thrown out in a similar capacity.
And then the Pirates, as they've shown before, you look back at even someone as marginal as like a Vin Mazzaro of cycling guys in and out through waivers who have these contracts that won't get picked up. They did it this year with Rodimus Lees and some other guys. And I'm assuming that's the scenario that went through with Vance Worley. It's we like Worley. We think because of his contract, no one will grab him. And that because of his contract, he'll accept the assignment and we'll have that depth at AAA for a starter. And it'll get him starting. He clearly wants to be starting. And it'll allow us to maximize the bullpen arms. And if someone needs to do the long relief role, Blanton's there. But I just felt like the Blanton for Worley upgrade isn't a big enough upgrade to warrant making the move. But Blanton over Deolis is a big enough upgrade. So I was a little taken aback when Deolis was sent down. So, but okay, I get it. They try to get Worley down through waivers. But then, you know, that's when the unthinkable happens and AJ gets hurt. And now they're just in the day of the deadline. They no longer have their number three starter. And if you watch that game, I pitched growing up for years through high school at a high level and all-star teams. And I destroyed my shoulder. I remember what it felt like to still be pitching and not throwing with my full might. And when I tuned into that game, it was like the third inning, and I saw people talking online how Burnett didn't look good. And the first pitch I saw, he threw like an 88 mile an hour fastball that you could just tell. You could tell he didn't put everything behind it, that he was just, I'm like, I've seen that maneuver before. I've done that maneuver myself. You're afraid that something's going to rip apart. And it was not shocking to me to see that he's had problems, much like it wasn't shocking to anyone else. So now they're in this scenario where they need a pitcher. They would love to go straight to Worley, but can't because he's on that waiver for, what is it, 10 days?
Mm-hmm.
And no one else is really around. You've got Blanton. So you're kind of forced into making a move, and now here we are. It was just like the perfect storm of little scenarios that equaled one giant essentially. Is that how you think it played out?
I think so. That I think the adjective you used was unthinkable or something to that end to describe AJ getting hurt, which it was interesting because leading up to the deadline. And the days before, I was listening to one of the Pittsburgh radio stations. I can't remember which one. And one of the personalities was talking about how AJ's so durable and you have to trust that AJ's going to be great, that it's just a bump in the road. There's no way AJ could get hurt. He's pitched 200 innings every year. You know, he's been so durable over the course of his career. I'm thinking to myself, well, sooner or later, the tread's going to wear off the tires, and this could be, you know, it's one of those things that when your arm suddenly falls apart, it doesn't need to be a slow, gradual thing. It can very much just be a, well, he's done. And you're in a position where you went from a month or two ago with Cole, Liriano, and Burnett being so dominant in a trio at the top of the rotation that you'd feel really good about, and Morton pitching well, to Morton now, you know, ERA in the fours, Burnett maybe a month off does it good, maybe not. And now you're lining up Colton Liriano, which I still trust them to pitch against just about anyone. Cole Liriano and not a whole lot after it.
And to go from that, you've got one day to look out on the market for something, or to use one of those internal options in the meantime. And it's nothing against J-Hap. I just think he's a marginal lefty veteran guy who on most teams probably is a perfectly fine number five starter, which the Pirates already have in Jeff Locke. They have a younger J-Hap who's already as frustrating to watch. And I've stressed this from the beginning and before we started recording tonight, when you're going with these back end guys, just give me someone who's efficient, throws strikes, you know, works around, keeps the ball down. And we've seen guys do that. Worley had a great year doing that last year. In spurts, Brandon Compton, who's not that great of a pitcher, has had success at the major league level working that scenario. His first time up, he ran through a handful of good starts. He was serviceable last year when called upon. And I feel like the Pirates have a lot of those guys in AAA that they've brought along, but then when time comes, they don't trust them. I'm not knowing what benefit it is of trotting J-Hap out there, who's been terrible his last however many starts, over a guy like an Adrian Sampson, if they would have been, you know, able to call him up.
And the unfortunate way the lineup or the rotation lines up, rather, with Liriano, who's obviously a much different pitcher than Hap and Locke, but Liriano, Hap and Locke all in a row, where you've got three lefties. I mean, tonight and tomorrow, it's going to look awfully similar for the Cubs. And, you know, that lets them settle in a little bit, I guess, or what have you.
Are they going to try to break that up at all?
I'm wondering how, well, from the Liriano standpoint, if you bring him back early since he only had to go a couple innings on Monday, or if you don't risk that this late in the year and you just kind of, you know, build that in as extra rest into his schedule. Without looking at the days off, I don't know if they're able to skip someone, but you would assume that every opportunity you have to skip a Hap or a Locke, you probably do at this point.
Thursday's the next off day. Thursday and then Monday.
So to that end, you have the ability to skip one of them. It's tough because do you ask Cole to... when you had three pitchers that were, you know, all horses, you don't really worry as much. But now, like every little thing, you don't want to risk the one pitcher that you have that you really trust. And at the same time, Liriano's... I don't know. I think you do. I think you have to split them up if you can. But at the same time, the overall quality of the rotation probably is more important than who's pitching on what day. Like the problem to be solved, I think, is how do you upgrade over J-Hap for the next month? Because I don't know that when you got him that you anticipated needing him to, you know, make five or six really important starts.
Would you call up Tyler Glasnow?
Not yet. I think in September you will see him, and it very well could be a David Price-like situation. The nice thing is that Glasnow's innings are already down this year because of a DL stint, so he still has time that you're not taxing his arm too much. It worries me a little bit throwing somebody right into the fire, because he's obviously a very valuable prospect, and you don't want to, you know, risk the next couple years in exchange for, you know, a month or two this year. But I think he's going to throw innings. I don't know in what capacity. I'm still wondering what kind of August trades are there to be made. I don't worry as much about the lineup. I think maybe if there's a bench bat that goes through, sure. But at the same time, where the waiver priority stands, you're not going to get you're not going to see too many options. Most National League teams have similar needs to the Pirates, so anybody that from the Padres is going to get snatched up probably, or players like that. And in order for an American League player to reach the Pirates, it has to go through the entire American League and everybody in the National League but the Cardinals. So while you'd like to think that you'd have some trades at your disposal, all those blocking waiver claims might pop up too. I was just thinking, like, does a James Shields make it to the Pirates? And if so, would you claim him?
The interesting thing is that it's the Padres with pitchers who could potentially make it through. You look at a James Shields or an Ian Kennedy or two names that I've seen. But it's the Padres who had all these assets at the deadline and refused to deal anyone. They passed the deadline and they're still there with Justin Upton. They're still there with Tyson Ross. There's no movement on someone like a Cashner. They went all in on this season. It's not going well. For some reason, they you know, at around six games out of the wild card, I guess they're still in it. But, you know, teams like the Cubs have gotten better. The Mets are there. The Nationals are still there. It's doubtful the Padres make a move.
I could see in a couple weeks they might change their team.
It finally dawns on them that it's not going to work out.
Yeah. And I think somebody like a Kennedy probably makes it through because he's been not so good. I don't know. At the same time, the financial commitment isn't considerable. So maybe somebody grabs him just to grab him. Or just to keep him away from the Pirates, because the Cubs could easily do that and put Kennedy in the bullpen just to make sure the Pirates can't improve. Shields would be interesting in as much as that's a big commitment. And he's been not great, but serviceable. He's got the big game James reputation. So he's somebody that I would trust to show up. And I mean, as recently as this past offseason was, you know, highly sought after. He still strikes guys out. That's where I'm looking is what's going to happen next. Because there's, despite all the hype around the 31st trade deadline, there are still August moves. It's just a shame the Pirates aren't the... I'd almost feel better if the roles were reversed and the Pirates were behind the Cubs, in as much as then you could add to your team. But anybody that hits the waiver wire, you know, there are teams like, you know, the Mets or, you know, the Nationals, the Giants that are in similar positions and could use those guys too.
So I think you're looking at today's J-Hap awful start. You got 2 days off in the next seven where you can probably skip him for a week or so, which is great considering the teams that are coming up. You're looking at Cubs, Dodgers, Cardinals. Avoid using that option as much as possible. Go with Cole, Liriano, Morton as long as possible. September, you're looking at Glasnow. Maybe Vance Worley gets back through waivers. We'll find that out soon. Radamus Lees has been good as a starter in Indianapolis. I shouldn't even just say good. Give him his credit. He's been very good. That's someone they could probably give a look at if dire straits happened. And then also, like you mentioned, the August moves.
Do you go to Blanton even? Do you go to Blanton over Hap? I don't know why you got Hap if you think that Blanton's is equal.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that I wasn't that high on Adrian Sampson. He's got utility in as much as he's a controllable arm, but he's not, you know, he's not going to set the world on fire. So the cost for Hap was relatively low if you do value the veteran presence, I guess. But I just don't understand, you know, you got Blanton for free. Do you really need another arm like that? Depth is good, I guess. But honestly, I'd probably almost rather plug in Blanton for a couple starts and see how it goes. And that's, Blanton's got no upside at all, but I would probably just rather have the steadying presence who's performed better this year.
So they have no good options is what we're saying. Unless you're someone that thinks the good option is just bringing Glasnow up now, which, as we've seen from the Pirates, isn't likely to happen. So you can be upset at their process and not going all in for a David Price or someone, but that's just how it is. This is the world we live in. And it's, you know, I've seen Neil catch a lot of flack for another deadline coming and there's no major splash. I could just say that I'm glad I'm not a major league manager, because I know the temptation is there to make this big splash. But we've seen many times in the past where the teams that make the big splash, it doesn't work out. Like ask the A's how Lester, Samardzija, and Hamill worked out last year, because they didn't win the wild card game and now they're terrible this year. And they gave up a lot of assets to make that happen. And we've seen countless times like that. And running a team like the Pirates, from being a fan, it's hard to gauge that win right now with the wanting to stay relevant for the next years to come, because I don't want to see another 20 years of losing. I just don't. It's if the Pirates are in playoff contention each of the next 10 years and never win a title, it's still been fun. You know what I mean? It's been fun.
Yeah, they.
At the end of the day, it's Major League Baseball. It's entertainment. I'd rather have my team be good and in the hunt every year than, you know, win one title and then just be completely irrelevant for the next 15.
Yeah, relevant was going to be the word I was going to use. It's nice the fact that they actually are in a race. They're talked about as being one of the better teams in the league. They don't have to be, they get the ESPN games. They're actually somebody that a lot of other teams wish they were like, so you can't really fall for the Pirates for not making those moves. I don't think that I would have made a lot of those moves myself. I question maybe there are a lot of the lower quality moves that maybe went unmade that I wonder what the asking price was. Like I still wonder what the Reds want for Marlon Byrd, things like that. That you're not talking about your Glasnows, your Josh Bells, anybody on a high end. But then again, even those moves that the Pirates made, like an Aramis Ramirez, haven't necessarily worked out so far like they wanted them to. So it's all a crapshoot. I'd rather not buy into the hype right around the deadline and make moves just because after this date I can't do anything else.
Right.
I'd much rather have my general manager be in a position where he feels comfortable with his roster all year long.
I agree with that. And I think it's a fine line. I wouldn't hate on anyone who's in that side that wants to deal every prospect for a big arm. Like, I get it. I'm not giving you got your opinion. I don't agree wholeheartedly, but I understand where someone's coming from. But to get where the Pirates are now, they've put themselves in the position of, they could have the best record in the majors if the Cardinals weren't such a freak of nature. A lot of teams that would want to be in the Pirates' position right now, and they've done that with the team that Neil's built. And you know they're going to get two big additions when Mercer and Harrison come back, which can't be overlooked. And I feel like the other deals that they made will help them in the now and down the line. You mentioned Aramis at the time that was. Listen, Aramis hasn't lit the world on fire, but he can play a steady third, and he's an actual major league bat, whereas before they were starting Brent Morrell there for a couple games.
And he was free. Again, there's you can't underestimate for like that. It wasn't a bad trade. It's just it's a shame that it hasn't worked out better. He was on fire in Milwaukee and comes over and gets stuck in a 4-for-30 slump. So that's tough. But the Soria trade, I'm assuming you bring Soria back next year. I think he has an option. So I don't know why you wouldn't spend about $8 million on him to come back and pitch at the back end of your bullpen.
That was a great move.
That's a really good move. I like him a lot, assuming he's healthy. Whenever he's been healthy, he's been a very good major league pitcher. And if they plan on using him in the seventh inning and keeping Watson in the eighth, like Soria in the seventh has to be one of the better seventh inning guys in all of baseball.
And he's a free agent after the year, by the way.
I thought he did have an option. Is that not true?
Not according to Baseball Reference.
I'm going to look that up real fast.
Signed through 2015, earliest free agent 2016. But yeah, I don't know. If you find something else, let me know. But giving up a guy like Jacoby Jones, who was just a marginal prospect at best, for a guy that can come in and shorten games, which is, we've mentioned numerous times, they need the bullpen help. So now you go to Melanson, Watson, Soria, with Jared Hughes in front of there. And we've already seen his usefulness just the other day when Melanson got tossed from that game. If that happens 2 weeks ago, who comes in and finishes that game in that tight spot? I mean, Soria's got...
Vance Worley.
Yeah. Soria's got the track record to be able to handle that situation. Whereas before we might have... And I'm forgetting off the top of my head who they had already used, but we might have seen like a Hughes who's iffy at times, a Caminero who's completely lost it seems. It would have been a sketchy situation, whereas now you've got a guy there.
And a lot of that is just the value of depth, because I kind of look at the Cardinals as a model organization, and you know, they added like a Jonathan Broxton, who as soon as you hear Jonathan Broxton, you think, well, the Pirates own him. So thank you for adding Jonathan. But like the Cardinals go out and get a guy like that who isn't necessarily, you know, he's not Craig Kimbrell. He's not, you know, Francisco Rodriguez or the other guys who were, being tossed about as available at the deadline. But he's serviceable. So being able to add that depth, there's definitely a value. And I think the Pirates did fine for themselves. They just have gotten a little unlucky in the past few days. And you know, hopefully they're able to turn things around. Tyler Glasnow would be awesome if he came up and lit the world on fire. But I'm always worried about playing for this year because, like you said, you don't want to end up back in that long extended funk. And I'm not willing to give up the next few years for, you know, another push this season. There's going to be an off season at some point where I think they have to start, you know, making those big moves, the big free agent signing, something like that. I think that's the difference between the Cardinals and the Pirates right now, is that the Pirates make a lot of Cardinals, you know, quality, like evaluating talent well, those kind of deals. But the Cardinals go out and sign the $100 million free agents, whereas the Pirates don't.
And it's going to be the first big interesting move from the Pirates might be when McCutcheon's contract is up or nearing its completion. Is he someone that they sign again and hold on to because this is their first franchise guy they've had in 20 some years? Or do they try to move him so they don't lose him for nothing? Do they ride him out? Whereas you've seen the Cardinals in the past let a guy like Albert Pujols go. They've certainly did not hesitate to move on onto something else. And they've had guys to pick up the slack. And the outfield being a position of strength for the Pirates, I think that'll be the biggest in the future decision that will really see what kind of a GM Huntington is.
Yeah, and I mean that there was starting to be some talk of that last year. It's so so early that I guess we don't have to necessarily start worrying about it yet because he is so controlled. My gut says you go the Pujols route. Just get as much of him out, get out of him as you can. If the Pirates are in a better position and they can afford to pay him, great. Or if, you know, he's, but at this point, I don't think it makes sense to pay him. You've already got the surplus out of him, so I don't know that you'd necessarily get surplus value out of keeping him. You'd get the the marketing value of having Andrew McCutchen be a career Pirate, but
right.
I don't think the Pirates have the payroll necessarily to do that. I'd probably rather let him go in, you know, what, 3 years, 4 years? But make that be a decision down the line.
Yeah, let's not get all depressed about it. there is one guy they shipped out, though, before we even try to finish up without mentioning that Jose Tabata is no longer a Pirate.
And Michael Morse is, so that's...
Do they win that trade?
That's shuffling deck chairs. I mean, I think technically you do. In a, with you make that trade, I guess, solely with the idea that maybe you face Bumgarner or John Lester in a one-game playoff. So you make that trade entirely so that you don't have to play Pedro Alvarez at first base for one game. And you pay Morse a fair amount of money to do that.
It's not... See, the Giants won a World Series last year with Morse and Ishikawa on their team. So, and maybe they're trying to catch that same lightning, but at the same time, like you mentioned, and we've talked about this in the past, of that wild card game stares at you right now of John Lester or Madison Bumgarner. And now after all these moves, instead of what was, you know, a horrible situation of having guys like Sean Rodriguez potentially starting that game, you're looking at Morse at first base. You know, if you wanted, you'd have Mercer back at short. You could have Gong at second or third with Harrison at second or third. If you don't trust Polanco to hit the lefty, which I think you would leave him in, but if not, you could put Harrison out there. You now have options with Aramis there as a righty, whereas before that was just a matchup I wanted no part of. Now it sort of looks okay.
Yeah, it's passable, and you have to figure the other teams looking at facing Gerrit Cole and, you know, not feeling very comfortable either. So I think you're in a decent position to advance, and it's a shame that that's going to be a coin flip. And I think the odds of the Pirates being, you know, in a position anywhere but the wild card is probably slim. You're probably not catching the Cardinals at this point. I wouldn't bet on that. But yeah, I think the Morse move was okay. The Ramirez move was okay. Soria does not have an option, so now I'm less enthused. I was really excited. I thought they had I thought it was an expensive option, but I thought they got to keep him. But I think I must have read that in error. But even so, as a rental, that's fine. I think the interesting thing is you should have the money to spend this offseason and a number of really big, talented arms on the free agent market. You've got to make a splash at some point. But I don't feel like Cunnington's the guy that does that in season. It's, you know, a lot of pressure to make that kind of move under a deadline, whereas in the offseason you've got, you know, you know who you're going after. You know the market that's established. You know the price that you're going to pay. And you can go out and get your guy versus having to get, you know, the best option out of what's currently available.
Right. And he's a little more methodical in the offseason. Even if you just look at an unassuming move of Justin Wilson for Francisco Cervelli has turned into an offseason steal. He seems that's when he works his best. And I don't mind that being his case. It's, you know, we famously heard the line before of you just get to the playoffs and then it's a crapshoot, and he builds teams good enough to get to the playoffs. So I can't go even beyond that. If we can consistently keep doing that, I think you're bound to break free at one point. And like I said, the trades don't always work out. They just don't.
And you got the bull. I think the one that almost assuredly will work out is the Soria trade. And being able to shorten a game, I guess that has to factor in as well. That, yeah, J-Hap's not ideal, or Jeff Locke's not ideal, or Charlie Morton, or whoever is pitching, you know, game four of a series. But the fact that you probably only have to have them go five innings. I guess it would be interesting to see if the Pirates also almost went the... I think it's the Rays that are doing some research on limiting the number of times through a lineup their starters can go. That there's numbers that show the more exposure your starter has to a lineup, the worse he gets hit. So if you could have like a Jeff Locke only go through the rotation or through the lineup twice and then pull him early, being proactive, even if he looks like he's still doing good, knowing that the next time through you're probably not going to be as lucky, being able to go, you know, lock for even like four or four and a third, throw Blanton out there for a couple innings, then get to Hughes, Soria, use those weapons in the bullpen because that's a clear strength right now. It's tough. The lineup's great. The top of the rotation's great. The back of the bullpen's great. Hopefully AJ's healthy, and hopefully Harrison and Mercer come back healthy, and then you start to look pretty good.
Except for the biggest issue facing them right now is that it's Cubs, Dodgers, Cardinals, Mets. So if the offense doesn't carry them a little bit, and those top, they don't win those games that Cole and Liriano start, they could be in some trouble in a real hurry.
Some and pitching mismatches there.
Yeah, it's a little scary. Thankfully they've got the four to five games in hand right now, but that can quickly evaporate as the Cubs are on a win streak and have gotten better, the Dodgers have gotten better, the Cardinals are there, the Mets are, like it's the quite, Mets are on quite a the murderer's roll. Row coming up.
The Mets are on a roll and have a really weak schedule, and the Pirates are on a skid and their August looks. If you get through August, you're in really good shape because you've basically measured yourself against teams that are very similar to what you want to be. And so far, August isn't treating the Pirates that well. But I don't know. Maybe tomorrow you go out and beat Dan Heron and all of a sudden you feel great about yourself again. I mean, if you beat Dan Heron and if Cole outduels Clayton Kershaw, then you're thinking, you know, that's two good notches. Or if they go the other way, then you start to really worry. But that's baseball, I guess.
And it is. I mean, what a game! it's fun to listen back on these, how we've swayed from being entirely pessimistic at the beginning of the year to questioning the last man on the roster, to feeling super good about the All-Star break, to now this.
it's crazy too to think that, you know, depending on when we could have recorded these two, the episodes could have been drastically different. A couple episodes, if we record during the All-Star break as opposed to shortly after, you come off a giant Cardinal series where you feel great to being deflated by the Brewers. You come off a trade deadline where, yeah, you're probably questioning J-Hap, but you probably don't think too much of it, to actually seeing J-Hap pitch for the Pirates and thinking, you never want to see that again. Or thinking, Aramis Ramirez is great, to all of a sudden Aramis Ramirez hasn't gotten a hit in a week. They play 162 for a reason. Over the course of, 2 weeks, anything could happen. It'll all even itself out in the end. And so far, if nothing else, if you told me in April that the Pirates could be, four games up on the wild card with 2 months to play, you'd much rather have them be four games up than four games down.
Yeah, we'll take it. We'll take it.
You've got a fighting chance. It's going to be interesting one way or the other. They're relevant and they're in a position regardless. I think that's another good thing is that I'd be worried if they mortgage the future, but no matter what, I guess there's the positive. Glasnow's at AAA now. Josh Bell's at AAA.
Polanco's seems to have leveled himself out.
Alan Hansen's, you know, performing pretty well. You know, you've got all these young controllable Jung Ho Gongs. You know,
Wait, rookie of the year consideration.
I was gonna say I don't know. I haven't done enough research there to see if he's got. He's not gonna win it, right? There are too many pitchers out there that are. Right.
The article I saw most recently had Gong. No, it didn't. The people in the comments mentioned Gong. It was Chris Bryant, Peterson.
Jock Peterson's rookie of the year.
But yeah, I mean they're all in their own way good, and people in the comments were throwing Gong out there that they had WAR up there as a stat, and he's got a better one than all of them and playing a more premium position, having to fill in at shortstop. So we'll see. He'll get consideration. He'll get votes, I'm sure.
I think he gets some, you know, because he played professionally. But it's different coming from Korea as opposed to coming from Japan, I think, or Cuba or anything like that, because there's always been the talk of, like, well, Ichiro wasn't really a rookie because he was exposed to high-level competition. You know, I don't know that there's a difference of Gong coming from Korea versus, you know, Bryant and Peterson coming from the minor leagues here, but I'd be surprised if Gong won the award, but you can't underestimate or understate the value that he's had to this team and the fact that he's going to be a Pirate for the next few years. The fact that I think there's another big Korean bat that's due to come over next year. And you would think that the Pirates would have a leg up there if they had any interest in him, having been the first ones to Korea.
Although with Gong's success, it may have bumped the prices up. So he could have priced them out of it too. It could work both ways.
That's true, but the fact is that that move, like you said, the Cervelli move, those kind of things that Huntington's been doing. Even Caminero, who's in the game pitching now. Getting him essentially for nothing, and he's played a big role on this team. Even Adiolis Guerra, who, I don't know, I think I'm higher on him than most, but taking someone who had a former pedigree and getting some meaningful innings, even if they are just, you know, long relief. I hope they had to designate him for assignment, but hopefully he stays in the organization and they get another chance to see him. Although, much like Worley, I don't know that he really factors into their plans. It's a shame. I like when they bring on these guys, they make them a reclamation project, and then they kind of just cast them aside. Clayton Richard's another name that you wonder if they hadn't let him go to the Cubs, you know, if he wouldn't be Jay Happ right now. But
And he had to come up for another spot start for the Cubs and then got DFA'd again, so he's...
It's out there.
Yeah, there's potentially a chance that he makes his way back. Maybe they call the Cubs and say, "We helped you out.
Not
help us out."
I don't think the Cubs are going to be doing any helping of the Pirates right now. But I mean, there's always the possibility for a, you know, waiver claim or something like that. But I don't know. I trust Huntington and the direction the organization's trending. Just generally speaking, even if the past week has been negative, the season's been positive. There's a lot of good to take away from it, and you're in a position where you're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. You know, you're in a good position to potentially host another playoff game, even if it is just a one game playoff. And if you get past that, you know, anything can happen. The Royals and the Giants showed last year what you can do with a wild card spot. So I guess we'll have to see where we go from here, but
we'll see if anything happens in August, and we'll touch base in a couple weeks again after this murderer's row of a schedule and see what's left of the Pirates after that.
Third place, looking up at the Cubs, two games out of the wild card, wondering why Jay Happ has to pitch four games a week, because it seems like that's what he does.
Let's hope not.
Or they've, you know, won 10 out of 14 and solidified their putting pressure on the Cardinals. It wouldn't surprise me to see it go any way or either way. And I think that's what's so exciting right now is you honestly see things that you never expected to. So you know, I'm hoping they're competitive. I guess that's it. The games like tonight when you're you're out of it almost from the get-go, and you feel like there's no hope. Hopefully they can avoid those ones, but I think they will. I think we'll be in pretty good shape.
Well, we'll find out in a couple of weeks. Until then.
Until then, I get to go watch Jeff Flock pitch against Dan Heron tomorrow.
Let's have fun.